If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com. Oh.
Up ahead, look out.
Hello, Amari Stoudemire elevates and detonates.
Hello there, Planeteers. Welcome in to another episode of the Suns Planet Pod. I am Bruce Velez, one of the co-hosts of the show today. As you guys can see, Jake is not here with us. He had a little trip with his wife that he had planned, so he is not going to be here for the final episode, but that does not mean we are going to be doing it alone. We are going to be doing the podcast with, so says Jay, Justin from the Fanning the Flames podcast. Lucky to have him back on. We had him just a couple weeks ago as well. So Justin, how you doing, and welcome back on the show.
Bruce, hey man, I'm doing well. Appreciate you having me back on. Jake, wherever you are with your lovely wife, I hope you guys are having a fantastic time. And I guess it's apropos, since Jake's not here, to replace the guy who has the second best hair in like the Suns universe with the guy with the best hair in the Suns universe, you know. So it's fair. But no, dude, I appreciate you having me on. I always enjoy coming on, chopping it up with you. And I think I've officially been on this podcast more times this season than we've put out our own episodes of Fanning the Flames. So we've reached a new all-time low, or all new time high, depending on how you look at it from that perspective on our pod. But so it's always good to get to come on here and chat with you, buddy.
No, yeah, it's awesome. I was going to say, we get to have our discussions in the group chat that we have, you know, just talking about the Suns and stuff like that. That's always just fun to have those conversations. But it also is nice to, like, have these big discussions. Like, I know we did the Megapod a couple weeks ago as well with everybody. That was super fun. We're definitely going to have to get that going. I know me and Jake have talked about that gearing up to the playoffs gearing up for the offseason and for agency and stuff like that. But unfortunately, there is some sad stuff to talk about with the Suns, as they did get eliminated from the playoffs. They were the only team to get swept in the entirety of the NBA playoffs, which is a little sad. But obviously, with the expectations of the season heading into this year, with them, you know, not predicted to be in this position, I think it was overall a great season for this Suns team. But let's dive in and let's talk about kind of that OKC series towards the end of it. Jake and I talked about the first two games here, but we could talk about kind of games 3 and 4, Justin, for a little bit before we get into some offseason stuff. The Suns in game three versus the Oklahoma City Thunder did try to, you know, bring it back home and try to give this team some life, but it just wasn't enough in that game as well. They lost 121 to 109. And in this game, Dylan Brooks was the leading scorer with 33 points. Jalen Green had 26. Osu Igudaro had 15 points. And Devin Booker had 16, while the Thunder were led by Shai Gilgeous-Alexander getting a playoff career high 42 points. And then right after that was A.J. Mitchell with 15 and Chet Holmgren with 10. What were kind of some of your big takeaways from this game three performance, or just these last two games in general?
Yeah, so and I was actually at game three. And honestly, like going into that game, and I didn't say it out loud because I felt like if I said it out loud, I would totally jinx it. But clearly that wasn't the case. But I had a good feeling going into game three. I'm like, look, game one was a disaster. Game two was less of a disaster. Game three, hey, we're trending in the right direction. We're coming home, you know, hopefully get a big game from Book and maybe pull out a win. And then, you know, game four, then, you know, who knows what happens, and maybe we make a series out of this. Obviously it did not go that way. Book did not have a big game. And you know, it was one of those where I got to, of course, I never get to games late, but I played in a charity golf tournament that morning and like literally walked from a green to my car with my clubs, got in, threw on a different shirt, went to the game. So I showed up a little bit late. The first quarter, like there was some good excitement. The crowd was into it. There was like, it felt like a playoff game and it felt like we were putting up a fighting chance. And then OKC did what OKC does, both in the good and the bad. And, you know, just kind of took control of that game. And it was flat in the arena. It kind of, it just felt dead. And it felt like by halftime, it felt like the series was done to me, even though we're, you know, halfway through game three. But ultimately it's one of those things like, you can't be too surprised about it, right? I mean, OKC is a team that, for all intents and purposes, looking like it could be a generationally great team. You know, if they manage to keep some of these guys together, they can be annoyingly good for the next God knows how many years. Let's not think about that. To your point, ultimately, the last two games fizzle out. We get swept out of the playoffs. Like you say, the only team to get swept. I feel like, hey, look, we're standing out from the crowd. Go but you have to look at the season as a whole and take it as a success, because the experts said we were going to win 30 games this year. We far surpassed that. I mean, shit. I, next to Boyd from the Aussie Suns podcast, I might be the most optimistic, unrealistically so perhaps, Suns fan out there. And they won more games than I predicted them to win. I said they would win 42, I think I said, 42 or 43. But anyway, so yeah, sucked to get swept out of the playoffs, but take it as a good positive learning experience too for these young guys. You know, we got to see Rashier Fleming actually make it onto the floor in game four, not game three, game four, right? Was that game four? That was game four, yeah.
Yeah.
It was like game three, I would have been much more excited. But yeah, man. I mean, it is what it is. It's nothing that can be too unexpected. We can be disappointed in being out of the playoffs, but I think big picture, we have to look at it and be happy that the season went the way it did and just hope that it's a sign of things to come and continued improvement, because this was a bigger leap than people expected, which is kind of a funny thing to say, because like we had fucking Kevin Durant on our team last year. We took a bigger leap this year without him. Yeah, how'd that work out for Houston? God, that's so fantastic. I'm sorry, I'm going to get ADHD kicking. But the level that they kind of improved on from where they were expected to be this year, I think you have to hope they take the gradual improvement angle moving forward, and not the, you might be too young to remember this, Bruce, but what was it, 2012? When we like almost made the playoffs, and then and it seemed like we were in a rebuilding mode, almost make the playoffs. And he goes, you know what? Maybe next year we can make the playoffs. we try to make the playoffs, we don't, and then that sets our rebuilding back like a few years. Now that also helped us land Devin Booker, so that's, you know, take that for what it's worth. But I hope though this team doesn't try to make some big, we're going to make a leap here this offseason and improve the team dramatically. I think it has to be a baby step. So that's my answer to how, what I thought about game three. People are right. I talk way too much. Good Lord.
No, you're good. I really liked the part that you mentioned about the fans at game three, because I feel like mm-hmm. that was something that was talked about a lot from the Suns fan base via online Twitter, because yeah. I've never been to the Mortgage Matchup Center. I've never been able to experience it. But even I had a conversation with Jake. I think he said he was at the game with you. It was like a Pelicans game or something.
Oh,
like
bro. That. And that was an epic day.
And he yelled something, and like these fans like turned around and looked at him like he was, didn't say anything, but like we're kind of like looking at him like we're at a game, like I have my kids around me, like what are you doing? And like I don't know, like in Boston, that's just like laughed at, like, you know what I mean? Like everybody yeah. in the Boston crowd is screaming at, like, screw you Sixers, a lot worse in the crowd, like it is not, it's not pleasant.
Yeah, so I'd love to hear the context of what Jake told you, because I do remember some interesting interactions, but there might be another side that perhaps the look that Jake received from the other people might not be so undeserving. Did he tell you what he did at that game? No,
he like stood up and like was yelling at like the yelling.
Okay, like so you remember when we were in the finals? Remember the fucking the money guy?
Yeah.
Like, Jake started doing that, but, like, in a mocking way. But, like, if you're not sitting next to him, you don't know that he's mocking it. You think, so, like, I'm on Twitter. I start seeing people being like, look at this idiot. And I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. Like, I'm sitting next to him. So, if that's what Jake's referencing, then maybe. But no, it in that game, that was, did he tell you about how Jackson Hayes blew us a kiss that game too?
Yes. Yeah.
See, yeah, Jackson Hayes doesn't just like, you know, sexually abuse like women. Apparently it goes towards men too. That's terrible. I'm sorry. I should not have said that. That's terrible. No joking matter. Anyway, I digress. That game, no, Jake, but the Suns game against OKC, it was like, here, I'll tell you, compared to the game back then and this, like, this was more just a dead spirit. Like, there was no energy in the arena. It's like, okay, if you have it, let's just assume for the sake of conversation that Jake's story occurred. I'm not saying it didn't, I just don't remember it, but let's say it did. If you have a parent that's, or whoever that's like, oh, blah, 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 like, at least they're not being like, shh, be quiet, don't get so excited. You know what I mean? It in the arena, once that game started feeling like it was slipping away, it just felt, and look, I'm sitting here, I was part of that, but like, I'm not gonna lie, I'm sitting there, I'm like, I wish this place was more loud, but what am I gonna do, stand up by myself and start screaming? Maybe a not 44 year old version of So Says Jay would do that, but at this point in my life, I'm in a big crowd like that, I'm a follower, I'm not a leader. Okay, so yeah, I don't know what to do about that. Like, it's like everyone talks also about like the pumping in of the sound, which ever since Voida pointed that out to me is now really, it gets on my nerves too. So thanks for that, Voida. But something does have to be done to try to get the energy up in there. Maybe it's just Phoenix, man. Like, at the end of the day, we have a lot of transplants here. Like, I'm the product of transplants. I'm a native. And they're getting more common, but they used to be few and far between out here. And maybe that's part of it. Maybe as younger generations of Arizonans who are actually born and raised here start to go to these games and start being the ones that are paying money to go to the games, maybe it'll, I don't know, man. I'm just speculating. But it was dead. And it's got to be tough for the team. Like, you're in the playoffs and you're getting, you know, kind of tossed by OKC and your crowds. But at the same time, it's tough to get into a game when you're getting tossed by OKC. So I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's kind of,
I love Phoenix. Okay. We're great fans. We're just, you know, I think we get down and we're emotional. So sue us. Okay.
I was going to say, it just seems like sad to see from the social media perspective, like the people that are at the arena there and they're just like, yeah, the crowd is just deflated tonight. And like, especially when you see I know OKC doesn't really have much besides basketball. That's their only major sport. But, like, when you see them as the number one seed and how the Paycom Center is going so crazy in game one and game two, you kind of want that resemblance at least back home in your building so you can get the team to buy into that product, maybe be able to sneak a game because of the fans' impact.
Yeah.
But like you said, if the fans are not into it, I know some people have discussed online, maybe it's the prices are too much. Maybe it's just that, like you said, that maybe that there's not a dedicated fan base to the basketball side in Arizona that is there, that's there 24/7 to make sure to show their support for their team. It could be a mix of that. There's just a lot of kind of outside factors that really do limit that. But with Matt Ishbia, you know, saying that at his press conference at the end of the year that he wants to still be a big leader for the Mercury, for the Suns, and kind of paving the way for these directions of these franchises, I do expect that culture to build in these next couple of years with, like you mentioned, the young guys coming through. You, I know you mentioned Rashier Fleming, who got some minutes in the playoffs. Obviously, Kaban Malawach next year is going to be getting a bigger role. We obviously know Kobe Brea. There's still Ryan Dunn and Oso Iguodaro still growing. What are your kind of thoughts on where the Suns can kind of go next season with their potential?
Yeah, you know, let me one last thing on this whole arena and like the crowd thing, because as I'm thinking about this, and maybe I'm just, you know, being me here, but I think about why I make this comment about how I'm part of the problem too, right? I am, like, I'm there and I'm not going crazy and like what have you, because nobody else around me is, and I don't want to be that guy. Look, I might have clients or other fellow lawyers in the crowd. And they're like, oh, there, look at this, this is me. But what if, and we've got like the spirit team, like the dancers, and you've got like the guys that go and like do all the acrobatic type stuff, and they're there throughout the game. They do a fantastic job, but they're a bunch of like, God, I'm going to sound so old. They're a bunch of like young, like athletic, like happening kids, like whatever. Right. And then you got a dude like me. How are you going to convince a guy like me, dad who has a fucking job, professional, to act like he's not a 44-year-old dad of two who's a lawyer during the day for a few hours at night? How do you get me to do that? How about you get a bunch of dudes and ladies that are like me to be the ones that are almost like the crowd leaders, right? So I'm not saying like you get rid of like the young acrobat, but like you see those teams that have like the dad dance teams and shit. Like, yeah. Honestly, if you had a guy like me standing in front of like a section trying to hype up a crowd, I feel like people that are of my ilk, middle-aged guys, God damn it, I'm old. Bruce, this is like a fucking therapy session now too. But I feel like that would pull people out of their shells a little bit, right? Like, all you need is like a little spark to get that kind of thing going. And I come to find that if you can convince people to like start acting a little bit outside their shell and getting a little outside of their comfort zone, like it's kind of like a cascading effect. So I don't know, Matt Ishbia, you know, the $2 hot dogs, $2 tacos and all that stuff, fantastic. But maybe what you need are some mid-40s crowd leaders to really get this old ass professional ass crowd like hyped up, whatever. I don't know, man, just something's got to be done.
I like that innovation. Anyway, I have seen like the old dancing groups to right. I forget which team it was, but I saw like they had like a senior dancing halftime show.
Yeah,
like that.
It was probably fucking OKC, god damn it. They got it all figured out. But for real, like, I mean, and even you, Bruce, as like you're what, early 20s, right? Am I correct there? Yeah. Like, if you're at a game and you see some fucking weirdo like me getting all hyped up in front of the guy trying to get people going, like, wouldn't that make you go, look at this dude, let's go? Like, right? I feel like it would. I don't know. And I'm not saying me. I'm just saying like I would even go like somebody that, you know, maybe like somebody that's like if you can imagine what Jake will look like in like 15 years, like a dude like that hyping up the crowd. You know what I mean? Like, get some, to put it bluntly, like get some old white dudes out there to get like the old white people crowd hype. I don't know. Take us out of our shell. I'll shut up about that now.
Have them do like a half court shot or something like that. That'd be pretty cool.
Oh, You know, they do the half court shot thing at Suns games, like everything. And you know, I always like, that's one of my favorite things, because my buddy Phil and I will always be like, all right, like, does he, not does he hit the backboard, or does he, it's always like, does he make it there, or does he hit, does he does he come within like the range? But yeah, anyway, I digress. I apologize.
No, you're good. I was going to say, the next thing we can kind of talk about is the press conference kind of towards the end of the season, as we did have the exit interviews from Brian Gregory and Matt Ishbia. And a lot of people kind of reacted different ways to the quotes that we had from Matt Ishbia and Brian Gregory. The first quote I think we should start on, because we've had some discussions about this back and forth as well, is the whole Devin Booker comment, where Matt Ishbia basically said that Devin Booker is our star, our guy, has been shutting down these trade rumors last season, but also did it again this offseason, saying that Devin Booker will bring a championship to Phoenix. He will be that guy. So Matt Ishbia still believes Devin Booker is 30 years old. He is not on that $70 million contract yet, but it will be kicking in two more years. So we still got four more years under wraps with the Suns team. I believe he ends in 2030. That's when his contract is up. So the Suns are saying that they want to still compete, still win, still kind of go all in with Devin Booker as their star. But obviously the Thunder are still here and the Spurs are still here. And that's going to be some big conversations as well. So what are your thoughts on Matt Ishbia stating that Devin Booker is still going to be that guy? Are you happy that he's still staying that? Or do you think that maybe, like some other Suns fans have been thinking, there could be a little bit of a switch up that needs to be done?
So, I mean, A, like, you can't expect him to say anything else. Like, yes, he can't go up there and be like, we're going to explore all options with Devin Booker this offseason. That would be like, internally and externally, that would be like suicide, right? Like, that would piss off Book, piss off everybody internally, like, piss off fans. Like, so he can't say anything but that. At the same time, he doesn't need to go as far as he did with his comments about Book, right? I mean, I'd run into a fire with Book and he'd run into one with me. I love that. But and then that's something I would say, okay, he'll say that. But Devin Booker's not going to be traded. We're going to win a chance. Like, he's really leaning into it heavily. And it Matt Ishbia has not come across like the type of dude that says stuff just to say stuff, right? So I think you take it for what it's worth. I think it's 100% where his mind is at. Now, how do I feel about it? I'm happy about it. Look, at the end of the day, the playoff performance, it's frustrating, right? When you look at Devin Booker's stat sheet. But we can sit here and talk about the nuance of everything that gets thrown at him defensively and what he has to do to kind of make his other teammates better, the gravity brings, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, it's hard for Suns fans, I think, to look at that stat sheet and be like, that's our superstar that we're soon going to be paying $70 million a year, $75 million a year to, right? But at the end of the day, Devin Booker is still Devin Booker, and he's still done what he has for the city and this franchise for the past decade now. And there's no reason to expect him to do anything different than everything he can for this franchise and this city moving forward. Devin Booker's bigger than just basketball, I think, at this point, to the Suns and to the city of Phoenix. Now, all of that being said, I think we also know what kind of dog Devin Booker is. So I'm very interested to see what happens, you know, next year with him and what he looks like next year, because Matt Ishbia was talking about how Devin Booker is going to continue to improve. Now, I sit here again, let's talk about me being old again. When you realize that Devin Booker is he 30? I think he's 30 already. He'll be 30 this October, I believe, right? I believe he's 30 this year. But either way, he'll be 30 in next year's NBA season. That is for sure. He'll be 34 when his next contract expires, right? Or when that extension ends, right? Is Devin Booker going to improve? Because you think about just the trajectory of an NBA career, and you don't really expect somebody to get better after their 30, especially when they've already been an all-star caliber player, star, superstar, however you want to categorize book, right? But perhaps Devin Booker evolves some, right? As opposed to just improving. I mean, if because there's speculation about this, is Devin Booker, is he no longer that guy that can take over a playoff game like we saw him do in the playoffs in years past? I don't think that's the case at all. I just think it's a matter of you have to have pieces around you that allow you to take over a playoff game, and he just doesn't have those right now. But if he is losing a step or whatever the hell the case might be, I'm not going to sit here and lose any sleep over Devin Booker failing to recognize that and doing something to adjust his game to account for it. I had a really interesting conversation with a buddy of mine, and I'm not even going to get into detail about it because I'll just say high level what he said, because his thought process made a lot of sense, and I feel like I would do it injustice, especially at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning. But he was like, everyone's talking about Jalen Green being the piece that we move this offseason, et cetera, because that's the contract that seems the most logical. But what if we don't do that? What if we say Jalen Green, he's 23 years old, he's the dude that's eventually going to be the next Devin Booker for this franchise, and let's let Devin Booker lead him down that path, and then Devin Booker evolves his game into more of a, because we know Devin Booker can be a distributor, right? Mm-hmm. Evolves his game into more of a true point type of position. Now, again, high level, and I'll just throw that out there. It was a very interesting thought, interesting conversation, but that's something I look at like, okay, can Devin Booker improve? Okay, I'm not going to say he can't. Maybe he can. Maybe he comes back next year and he's like, all right, bullshit with my three-point shooting last season. I'm just going to shoot 1,000 threes every day and come back next year. And who knows? But in the very least, I can see Devin Booker evolving. What we, I think, learned this year about this franchise and about Book is all the shit we dealt with since that finals run, frankly, the failures, they haven't been Book's fault. I mean, he hasn't been he's not the catalyst behind those failures. Because this year, there was a coach that was in place that, as far if I recall correctly, Book gave his express sign off on. Like, that was a guy that Book wanted, Book liked out of who they were bringing in. There wasn't a arguable, player that had a higher, status on the team. You know, there wasn't a KD, there wasn't a Chris Paul, and the team excelled, exceeded expectations. And I think that's what we have to look at. That shows that Devin Booker as a leader can do things. And I think, again, it shows a maturity that now that he's a veteran in the NBA, if he sees some part of his game that can't hang anymore, whatever the case might be, he's going to recognize, he's going to evolve that game. And I think he comes back a better player next year in some capacity, even if it's not because he's quote-unquote improved in some way. Like, Devin Booker's not suddenly going to get a higher vertical and start mm-hmm. dunking on guys, right? Like, but he'll figure it out, and I've got confidence in that. And you know what? Frankly, even if I didn't have confidence in it, what other choice do we have?
That's true. I mean, you have to kind of believe in it. And I, like you said, I'm very, very confident in what Matt Ishbia has said. And I like a lot of points that you brought up. Like you mentioned, I don't think he's drastically going to get better. Like, I don't think we're going to see him average like 32 points or something like that, right? Like a drastic stats change. But Booker, these last couple seasons, has averaged 26, 27 points, relatively shot the same, 46. He shot 49% back, almost 50% in 2022 and in 2023. But the last two seasons, shooting a little bit worse, around 45, 46%. You mentioned the three-point shot down a little bit to 33% compared to that 35, but roughly right around where it is. So maybe a little bit better statistical averages. And I think a big key to that is going to be the health of this team, right? Like, I know Matt Ishbia mentioned the continuity, which we'll get into a little bit later as well, but the health of this team was a big X factor as well. Like, Dylan Brooks leaving and Jalen Green first getting hurt in the beginning of the season, and then having Brooks step up to be that second option with Booker. But then also then when Brooks got hurt and Green came back, they never really had those three to really grow and kind of figure out the problems going into the playoffs, which I think was a big issue for how they kind of ran their three-man offense in that first round and why they had so many struggles. Do I think that Jalen Green and Dylan Brooks are, the best number two and number three options for Booker, maybe not on offense. And that's kind of why we saw a lot of the offensive struggles for Book in this series, because you mentioned the gravity of Booker. And I know a lot of people that stat watch don't see this, but they're not seeing, you know, Kaysen and Caruso and Lu Dort and J-Dub swarming and blitzing Booker on every possession, every time he touches the ball. It's just not really fair for that, for him to really be able to kind of get through to that. And that's what I think makes it a lot more difficult for some of these people to really understand. I do think I do like the point you mentioned as well with Booker, maybe with transitioning into more, maybe not getting better, but growing in a different role. I've seen, obviously, we've seen James Harden kind of do this like combo guard type of thing.
Literally the guy that my buddy referenced. Exactly the guy.
And that's what I thought Booker was kind of doing this season when he was kind of being more point guardy. I was trying to kind of figure out some stats along that. It wasn't really as definitive as I thought it was kind of this year, but maybe next year that's kind of the path that your buddy was talking about. And that's kind of the mold they have for this team, where, because Booker has stated, and I've seen this before from like Shane Young and stuff like that, from his reporting with the Suns, that like Booker doesn't want another point guard. Like, he likes being the point guard. You know what I mean? So all these people asking for like, oh, we need a Ricky Rubio, we need a Chris Paul so Book can be shot hunting again. It's like, who's to say Book wants that type of role again? Like, Book wants this on-ball duty where he's a playmaker but also a scorer at the same time. And I think that we can maybe see him mature into this like newer version of this James Harden, hopefully. And then, like you said, maybe that allows Jalen Green to be a better off-ball scorer, or maybe that allows them to find that secondary score, that secondary offensive piece, maybe at the power forward position, to really help them kind of get to that next step. And that's what I'm excited for with this Suns team, and for with Devin Booker sticking with this squad, is, you know, not really looking at his stats and averages and comparing that, but looking at how he can evolve as a player to really change the Suns' trajectory as a team growing in this Western Conference.
For sure, for sure. And shout out my boy Dre, who came up with that, who I had that conversation with. We spent an hour after a girls flag football chatting about that last week. So yeah, no, I mean, he helped me feel better about the world a little bit there.
After the losses?
After the losses. You know, him, if you know, it was, well, actually, that was, might have even been between some losses, but he still made me feel better about the world. Him, you know, who else did too? I chat with John Bloom the other day about the Suns. We went to go see Ben Hart, and put me in a much better place about the Suns in the future. I felt a little dark as I started thinking about like where we are financially and what have you, but I'm happier now.
Yeah, I honestly think we're not in as bad doom and gloom situation as everyone talks about. I know we have like $23 million in dead cap and all this, but they have early bird rights on Gillespie and Goodwin, so they can sign them over the limit. They might be a first apron team this offseason, depending on how Mark Williams' restricted free agency goes, but there are a lot of other options for the Suns to look at to make moves on the margins. I know two guys that people have kind of talked about could be out the door this season or potentially used as trading pieces are obviously Royce O'Neal and Grayson Allen. They were kind of speculated last season to be gone, but were brought back as key veterans. But with some younger guys like Rashear Fleming, who fans want to see more playing time, get out of next season, and with the signing of Haywood Highsmith as well, with him potentially being back next year, there are some options out there for the Suns to make some moves. But Matt Ishbia did say at the press conference that they are going to, you know, keep continuity, kind of stay the same. Brian Gregory kind of followed that up. I know, like you mentioned, Justin, like Ishbia is not going to come out there and say like, oh yeah, we're trading the whole roster, we're blowing this stuff up. But they're saying there's continuity with this team. You would expect that they're talking about at least Booker, Green, Brooks, some of these other key role players that have really stuck out. So what are your kind of takeaways with that? And I obviously do think we will see some minor moves. They still do need some more size, but who do you think could be those guys that potentially do get moved for those for some new additions?
You know, I mean, I do think it, like Royce and Grayson are the ones that do jump into my my head. And the continuity thing, it makes sense to me. If you think about the roster shuffling we did, you know, after our finals run, like I feel like we were constantly saying, all right, these guys just have to figure out how to play together. They haven't had enough time together. And that was constant. They never had enough time together for one reason or another. Season ends and then you get a whole new group that comes in, or half a new group, right? So if if we can maintain some continuity there, again, I think it's a positive just from a cohesiveness perspective. Again, it's also to a certain degree a necessity just because of where the team is salary wise and draft capital wise. But I think it's also a positive in that it means that hopefully they're going to be leaning a little bit more on Rashear and Kamon to a degree. I think Kamon still needs a little bit more work, as bigs typically do, right? They develop slower. They takes more time to develop. Plus, he's been playing basketball for such a short period of time. But, you know, the team's going to have to lean into those guys working out, right? That, and when they say continuity, I that's what I kind of see, is we need these dudes to become what we hope they have the potential to become in order for this team to take a step. So, you know, I feel like a lot of people took the continuity comments as basically, okay, well, great, we're just going to keep the same raw, you know, and that very well more largely might be the case, but again, that seems to be a necessity. And if that's because this front office is saying we're going to trust that these rookies from this season and Dunn and Oso are going to continue to develop and become.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. Forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
You know, better players than I... Look, JT, who was I? I think I was going to say JT Orr. Was that somebody? Is that like a hockey player? Jordan Ott. He's been known as a development guy, right?
Yep.
So let him cook. Let's see what these young guys turn into. And the continuity then makes even more sense. And again, it means that guys like Grayson and Royce could, in theory, become expendable, for a lack of better word, just because you need to open up a lane for these dudes. Grayson's so much with Kamami, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. And Michael P. brings up a great point here. I'm going to pull it up in the chat. He says, the Fleming and Malawach have breakout seasons next year.
Bingo.
They totally change the team's expectations to off-chart levels. And that's exactly what you were saying. I exactly agree as well. A lot of people are still questioning the Kamon Malawach pick, or maybe questioning Jordan Ott on why Kamon Malawach maybe didn't get as much playing time this season, with seeing some of these other rookies kind of picked around the same level having some shiny moments in the playoffs. But I think the one defining moment that not a lot of people are realizing, and it's the point you just illustrated, is one, that bigs take a longer time to develop, but two is that Malawach just started playing basketball only like 4 or 5 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Like he just started playing basketball. There's a lot for him to untap. And for the Suns specifically, they see Malawach as not just a building block, but a star mover, someone that can be a future building block and foundation part of a top three for the next 10 to 15 years. That's what they see with this guy. They don't want to rush him, ruin his expectations, ruin his morale. They want to bring him in the speed that's going to be best for him, regardless if that's the best for the team in like the projections of the season. And I think that's something that's kind of hard for some of the fans or some of the people that watch this team to really wrap their head around, because they want to see the young players getting the playing time. But what they're not realizing is the Suns could have lost maybe 5 to 6 more games if they allowed those guys to get the playing time compared to those veterans who had big time moments to help the Suns win some key games.
Right. And where's the harm? I mean, especially if I'm assuming people don't sit there and think that there's not a plan in place and there aren't discussions had and these players don't know exactly why they're getting the time they're getting or not getting the time they're not getting, right? Where's the harm in taking a young player like Malawach, who, like we're saying, has not been playing basketball for that long, or even a younger guy, even though he spent more time in college, in Rashier Fleming, and let them get used to the physicality of the NBA, the speed of the NBA and all of that, instead of just throwing them in there to the wolves? I mean, I look at it like, and again, Bruce, maybe you're too young to remember this, but there was a time in the NFL when if you drafted a quarterback in the first round, you drafted him high, he wasn't starting until, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line. And that was by design, because the NFL is insane and you don't want to throw a youngster like that to the wolves. I mean, I still think that the last quarterback that was done with might have been Phillip Rivers, because I feel like since then you get a quarterback and he's starting early, and look, whether that makes a difference or not, I don't know. I don't know the statistics on it, but logically it makes sense to let somebody learn their role and get used to a completely new profession before just letting them go and deal with dudes who have been doing it for years. And if it's a matter of getting these guys used to, you know, life in, not, and again, not just on the court, but life in the NBA too, right? You're traveling all the time. It's different. I see no harm in that. Let them develop that, let them get comfortable, and then unleash them when they're ready. So be it. Yep. That makes sense to me. And patience sucks, I guess. But you also avoid the potential of, you know, fucking with these guys' confidence too, if you throw them in the fire too quickly. And maybe that's, you know, would be assuming it would affect them that way. But who knows? I mean, fuck. No. DeAndre Ayton clearly didn't have a very strong mental composition. So maybe he could have used a year of development sitting on the bench. Kamal Malawach will be what we wanted DeAndre Ayton to be. That's what I'll say.
Yes, and I think a lot of Suns will die on that hill, and I think that's kind of the hype for this too. Like, I feel like that's why so many fans are waiting to see what Malawach turns out to be, because they had these high expectations with the DeAndre Ayton, right? Like, number one selection, went to the University of Arizona. I know I obviously wasn't like covering the Suns at this point, but I was obviously still a fan, and like, everyone that was in my circles back then was like, oh yeah, the Suns are about to take this leap. They're really about to make a difference with DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker for the next couple of years. Like, a lot of people thought that this team was going to be able to do it. And I know, obviously, for you, an Arizona native, and for like watching the team, I'm sure that that was the sentiment around the team as well. So seeing it not pan out, and then having this other like potential lottery chip like Malawach that can maybe get to that point. And then once again, I think a lot of Suns fans like have wanted to see Booker paired with a top tier big, because they know how lethal it can be. If Malawach can be that top five, top 10 center in this NBA, even if Booker's, you know, 32 at that point and still a dynamic guard, and still maybe not, you know, the best shooting guard, but still a top tier shooting guard in the NBA at that point, I still think that the Suns will still be in a great position with those two. And like you mentioned, with Rashier and Ryan Dunn or Oso, or how many of these other young guys like Colin really stick with this squad and really develop internally as well, I think that they'll be in a great future for the next couple of years, similar to like a Pacers, a Thunder, a Pistons, where like they have had that growth together for so long that they know how to play with each other. And I think that's going to be difference for when the Suns really step up.
And Jaylen, like, again, like, yeah, we're talking about the youngsters. Jaylen, he's what, 4 years in the league, 5 years, whatever, however long he's been in the league, but he's 23 again. Like, so dude, that like, Jalen Green is we talk about Devin Booker and okay, Book might not, you know, improve and significantly in different facets because he's been Jalen Green still like, who knows what the ultimate ceiling is for him. It's just, I mean, and we didn't even get a real good chance as fans to see flashes of it this year just because he was so inconsistent in his playing because of the injuries. Now, God, I hope he just stays healthy next year, but, you know, I still have a lot of, I have high expectations for Jalen Green. I mean, we've seen flashes of what he can do. He's a freak athlete. And at the end of the day, like, being part Filipino always just makes everybody like significantly better in life. So he's there. I feel like Jalen Green, a fully confident, like healthy and comfortable, like in the system and in the surroundings type of Jalen Green could be a difference maker next year too. I mean, we could see a completely different Jalen Green next year. Who knows? I mean, there's reasons to be excited, even if it's just a matter of, you know, maintaining some consistency here.
Yes, I agree. And I think it's going to be exciting to see if, like, we get 50 or 60 plus games of this trio of Brooks, Green, and Booker to see ultimately what they can be for the system. Because I think that's my, like, hesitation on really, like, I know they're obviously staying continuity and stuff, but that's, like, my main hesitation on wanting to move off Jalen Green so early is we still have the potential for him to be that difference maker, that young guard that can really help this team. So I'm not really ready to move off on it yet. I still would like to see another half season or full season of him at his potential or best potential that he can be for this Suns team so that we can really see him like rise up in the ranks and maybe even be a top tier guard because he was a former number two overall pick. He did come into the league with very high expectations. He just hasn't been able to find that rhythm or spark with the Rockets. And then obviously with the Suns this year, a little bit injured, that's going to be hard to fit in with a new team and figure out a new system and stuff.
And he was the leading scorer, right, on the two seed in the West last season, who then lost him, became the, what seed were they? The
fifth seed.
Fifth, and then got knocked out in the first round. So, okay, maybe that's a KD effect as well. But look, I mean, that team got worse when Jalen Green and Dylan Brooks weren't on it, right? Yep. I mean, you can't debate that.
I think Dylan Brooks was Dylan Brooks was a big piece that they lost. He was a big, like with the Suns, set the culture, set the identity, set the tone, set the tempo. He's a very, very big leader in the locker room. And the Suns made that very prevalent this year. You saw how he rubbed off on guys like Colin Gillespie, Villain Jr., and what that brought out of Colin this year. You even saw, I remember at the beginning of the season or like in the middle of the season when like, he was barking at Oso and Oso barked back at him in the timeout and Brooks was like smiling happy that like Oso like actually spoke up. Like those are the types of moments you want to see out of this team, especially a young team and one that wants to be feisty and like embody what Matt Ishbia said, like grit, hustle, grind, hard work. Like at the press conference, he said this is what he wants the Suns to be known as for the next couple of years. And as a fan who has seen the last couple renditions of this team and seen a complete 180 in just one season, it is amazing to see that and to hear those words and to see that with Dylan Brooks in this culture, it is clear that he is a big impact on like changing that for certain teams and impacting franchises in bigger ways, maybe not as a scorer, but as a actual like human and what he can bring to a team.
And he's done that at multiple, all the way back to Memphis. And here I'll say one thing too about Dylan Brooks one of the many reasons why I love this man. So you see what he does on the court. You see what he does for the team. You see the intensity he brings or what have you. He's also a dude like, again, my buddy and we have half season tickets. So I go to a lot of Suns games. He is also a dude who you will see almost every game inevitably down on the floor somewhere talking to fans. I shit you not. I think I even put it on Twitter. I saw him like hugging a little old lady one time on the floor. Like, I'm not even joking. I'm like, here's Dylan Brooks, like talking to this little old lady and her grandson before the game, gives this little lady a hug, goes back about his business. And I'm like, I'm sitting here going, this is the dude that the NBA is trying to convince us is a terrible person. Meanwhile, they like Draymond Green run around doing whatever the fuck he wants. It's insane. But another reason why, again, Dylan Brooks, and I think even maybe it's book. Somebody, the people have said it that like, yeah, Dylan's how he is when he's playing, but he's one of the best human beings you'll ever meet. I feel like that's like the perfect human being as far as I see it. If you can be a great person, but then be an asshole when you need to be. I feel like that's, if my daughters could be like that, then I've done my job as a father. If they're great human beings, unless they don't need to be and they have to be assholes. That's the key to life as far as I see it.
No, I love that. I mean, I'm sure you love to see that intensity brought out on the soccer field as well. I'm sure
100%, dude.
If you got that Dylan Brooks mentality out there on the field, you're not going to have any questions either. And I love.
Hey, we got State Cup finals today too. Let's go.
Ooh, let's go. Let's go. Hopefully, we can pull out a dub. I'd love to see that. But yeah, Brooks is just that guy. He truly is.
And yeah.
I love how you mentioned that story of him hugging an old lady, because we had Matthias from Austria on our show a couple weeks ago, and he was lucky enough to go to Phoenix. He got to meet Gambo. He got to meet some of the players, and that's exactly that's awesome. What he said about Dylan Brooks too. He said Dylan Brooks like seems like a bad guy from like how the media portrays him and everything like that, but he said he was the nicest guy of all time. Mm-hmm. He shook his hand, and then like after he shook his hand, Dylan Brooks was like, "You don't want a picture?" And then Matthias was like, "Oh, like I could get a picture? Yeah, I'm down." But you know what I mean? Like he was just like happy in the moment just to meet him. But like Dylan Brooks was like, "No, let's get a picture." And like you never hear the athlete be like, "Do you want a picture to the person?"
Right.
You know what I mean? Usually they're trying to get out of the situation and stuff like that.
Right.
So he's hanging with the fans, doing autographs, you know, taking pictures, doing all that type of stuff, but then also buying in on the court and being that relentless guy that the Suns fans like are paying, like, because the NBA is an entertainment as well, as long as it's a sports entertainment. They're paying to see Dylan Brooks make those antics to keep their team in, to will the heart of the squad. And you have to appreciate that from a guy like Dylan, who's really rosen in that occasions. Like I said, even if it's not shown up on the stat sheet, he's not dropping 20 points every single night. He has grown as a player, and even this season had a career high in points and rebounds with the Suns. Like, dude, you have to be very, very happy with that. I think obviously there's some concerns with maybe his shot selection, but I do think as the Suns get a little bit deeper or have some of these younger guys really grow offensively, he will kind of take that step back offensively. And I think that's why, even if they do extend him, he's not going to be like a bad contract. I think I'd be very happy with having Brooks as like my third, fourth, maybe even fifth option in 2-3 seasons on this Suns team in the starting lineup, but still being that, you know, number one or number two defender.
And he's the offensive steps that he's taken have been great to see, and I feel like the shot selection stuff kind of improved as the season went along too. But he's one of, I guess, you know, it's one of those things where if you're a fan that like kind of like is unhappy about Book not taking enough shots in the playoffs when like defenses are really crashing on him and what have you, it's like go back and watch some of the games when Dylan Brooks was kind of like the number one because Book and Jalen were out, and like when he's getting and he's just forcing them up in the fourth, like that you see that's why Devin Booker doesn't do that in the like and tries to like create for others. I think there's some logic behind it always. But yeah, no, Dylan clearly is a key piece to this team, and I mean when you think back to the press conference when they introduced Gregory and you know Ishbia was talking about you're gonna have a team that you know plays with grit and what have you. I mean Dylan Brooks personifies that, right? And I think he, again, like I was saying before, he personifies it in the right way because he does it when it needs to be done, but that's not his life mantra is be an asshole. That's never a good mantra to have.
Yeah, you never want to just be a total D-bag for no reason. You want to at least have a reason to have
exactly.
That. And for Dylan Brooks, he has plenty of reasons, regardless if it's the referees, regardless if it's other players trying to get underneath his skin, regardless of what the scenario is, he's always trying to make some noise. So, Justin, before we do sign off, we do have like 10, 15 more minutes before we hit the hour mark, so we could talk a little bit more. I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts on the off season here with the Suns just real quick. I know we kind of talked about it a little bit, but we obviously noticed that the Suns did need some more size against this Oklahoma City Thunder team. Chet Holmgren, Isaiah Hartenstein was just a lot to deal with this team, but also a lot of teams that were in the playoffs that the Suns could have faced or may have faced if they had beaten the Thunder would have ran into some of those issues. Like the Timberwolves have a lot of size. The Nuggets have a lot of size. Jokic, the Rockets have a lot of size. Those teams were able to just beat down on the Suns because of that. And power forward has been, you know, the main ticket everyone has been kind of talking about for them to go and get. But from doing some research and kind of really looking, one, power forward is very hard to describe in the NBA because they're, you know, either smaller threes or just sick or just fives. But also trading for one is going to be very hard because do you trade for a star one? Do you trade for a role player one? Do you allow Fleming and Haywood to kind of grow into those minutes and still find like a lower tier piece here? So what are your kind of thoughts on the power forward position? If you were the Suns, you need some size, you need some addressing. What are you trying to kind of really do? Are you going for that star chase, kind of like a Julius Randle $30 million type? Are you looking for like an OB Toppin $11 to $12 million type? Or are you feeling confident in some of the development with Rashear, Haywood, maybe Ryan Dunn, Royce O'Neal, if he does stick around to kind of fill in for those power forward minutes?
You know, and this is based on just what I've seen in, you know, the games that he's played, but I'm expecting that the Suns at some point in time are going to hand the power forward keys to Rashear Fleming. Right. And I guess the question becomes, do they think he's ready for those keys next season just yet? I'm guessing based on the amount that he played this year, that they're not going to push him into a starting role next season. Right. But let's assume that that is in fact the plan. Then I would imagine by the following season, the expectation would be that Rashear would be starting, if not at some point through next season, right? So if that's the thought process moving forward and that's what they're going to trust, then no, you don't go out and get a Julius Randle type or somebody that's going to be a higher paid for. I also don't think you go and get like a stopgap. At that point, aren't you just kind of shuffling chairs on the Titanic, right? If you're saying, okay, well, you know, we'll send Royce out, even though he's, you know, right, he's on the side of the really a three that plays in the four spot. But if you send him out for, an Obi Toppin or whoever else it might be, that's just going to be somebody that fills in for the. I mean, I don't see that's any better of a situation. Why make that move if a move's going to be made? Then I think it needs to be something that, well, for all intents and purposes, doesn't put another piece in front of one of the guys that you expect to be, you know, bringing up, right? It's like, I wouldn't expect the Suns to go and sign it. If they, assuming Mark Williams sticks around, who knows what's going to happen in that situation, right? That's a tough call. But let's assume he sticks around. I don't see them going, all right, let's add a fourth center here. No, like they're not going to log jam that. So what do they do? I have no fucking clue. I just don't like. I don't. But
Ignacio again, mentioning Bobby Portis.
Man. See, like, and I think that's the same type of thing. Like, well, we're gonna get Bobby Portis, and he's just gonna play in front of Rashear next year. And again, if they don't think he's ready, Rashear's even ready to get more minutes than he did this year, then maybe that is a logical move. But I almost feel like the team has to give Rashear that opportunity next year. Because like you say too, it's going to be tough to trade for. I mean, what power forward do you think is going to, I honestly haven't looked at this, so I have no clue. Yeah. Maybe there's some guys out there, but as I sit here, I can't think of a power forward that's out there that I'm like, oh, I bet that team's willing to come off them. We can go get that person. I mean, like Bobby Portis, maybe that would be the one, especially if Giannis is wanting out and that team's just going to blow up and rebuild. But how old is Bobby Portis? Is in early 30s, right? He's an older player. Like, let's not get older to inhibit like our younger guys. And that's he's not going to be a difference maker either. I mean, we're not suddenly winning a playoff series because we picked up Bobby Portis.
Exactly. I mean, I definitely have seen the talk about Bobby. I know he was mentioned around the trade deadline as well. A lot of people were talking about him. Personally, he struggled a little bit from three this season. I didn't really like the fit. And like you mentioned, he's just getting a little bit older. I'm not really kind of in that mode. With the Randle situation as well, I mentioned it. I know a lot of people have been talking about like Zion, Randle, these power forwards that maybe could come in to help change the direction. I'm not really completely sold on that either, just because I don't think it's worth to kind of like trade for a power forward to then like have a two-man duo of Booker and the power forward, but then you're still in some struggles because then you have still have some guard issues with like, who knows, is Jalen Green getting traded to bring one of these guys in? Like, I don't know. There's been the discussions of like John Morant. I know John wrote an article about that today for Brightside. That's just another crazy one as well. There's a lot of discussions around this team on making some splashes. I know the Anthony Davis waves have also crossed our timeline.
What are people doing?
Yeah, I don't know with that as well. A lot of people talking about Giannis.
Is Greg Oden still around? Is somebody like, can we sign him? Like, what are we like? No, come on, people. And I think also like, again, Matt Ishbia seems like the kind of guy that learns lessons pretty quickly. I don't think the Suns are going to be looking at any player that could be a culture killer, because we've seen what a culture killer can do to our franchise, and now we're seeing what a culture killer can do to Houston. A guy like Julius Randle gives me culture killer kind of vibes. No thank you. He's also the one that fucked up Cameron Johnson back in the day with that dirty ass knee to the quad that like ended up costing Cameron like 30 games. I think that was the game when he hit the game winner in against the Knicks here in Phoenix, but then ended up with like a leg contusion that kept him out. That might have even just led right into him being traded. I don't remember, but years blend together, Bruce.
Yeah, they definitely do. Especially, you know, I agree with that. With the Suns team, when I look back at some of these squads, I'm like, was that 2022? Was that 2021? It's so bad sometimes when I'm sitting here, and especially when like I know so many teams too. Like I think back to playoffs, and I'm like with the Celtics, I'm like, okay, so they lost to the Warriors in 2022, but then in 2023 they made the conference finals, but then lost. Like it's just all a blur sometimes.
Right.
So I totally feel you on that. Last,
it's thing, like you remember it all happened, you just don't remember what order or when. It could have been like 3 years ago, to 8 years ago. Yeah.
Last thing I do want to mention, because people are bringing it up, is the Giannis situation, right? Giannis. We talked about Bobby Portis. We can talk about Giannis. The Phoenix Rises, whatever quote book. I don't know what he was talking about. Anyways, Giannis. We all know this discussion happened last offseason. This discussion is going to happen this offseason. It's going to be basically around every single team. Oh, we should trade for Giannis. Suns, I don't think even have the package to get Giannis. I know we've kind of discussed this, but it's like they don't have the first round pick, so you'd have to trade like Rashier or Malawach or Jalen Green. And it's like, are we really giving up all our young talent to bring in Giannis? Like, sure, they can be really good together, but then we have no other pieces. That's kind of my thinking on it. What's your kind of quick thinking on that as well?
Yeah. I'm a hard no on Giannis. Like, I just, like you're saying, we're going to have to, we'd have to gut if whatever we have, we would no longer have. And we saw how that worked out with like going all in on KD. And I know Giannis isn't the same beast as KD. He's not as old as KD. He's not as cranky as KD. Sure, he won a title in Milwaukee, but I think he's also been very patient with Milwaukee at the same time, you know? So, like, he doesn't give those same type of vibes, but, you know, he's having a harder time staying on the court. And, again, it just destroys the whole idea of continuity, and you are once again back to two gigantic contracts and trying to piece together pieces. Sorry, that's a terrible turn on, but you know what I mean? You're trying to like put pieces together with duct tape around them and hope that that duct tape together thing turns into a championship contender, and it just doesn't work. So I'm okay passing on Giannis. I mean, I'm not picking up the phone to call if I'm Phoenix. I'll say that. They call and they're like, hey, we want to send you Giannis. Here's what we want. I listen, and then I say thanks, but no thanks. Click.
Yep. I agree. I think the injuries, like you mentioned, is a big part of it. I also think the age of kind of sacrificing, once again, like we are in this youth movement now, then going back into like title contention to then trying to like reset again, it would definitely hinder them. And I also think like the big difference with these teams too is that they have the $23 million in dead cap, and building a team with two stars and $23 million in dead cap is a lot harder than building a team with one star and a bunch of smaller contracts who, like, yeah, they might not be the best player ever, but they're at least contributing, fit on the roster. We at least have depth. Like, me and Jay talk about this all the time. I just don't want to have to go back to like last year where I'm like, oh my God, yes, Cody Martin's in. We actually have a defender. Like, that is a sticking memory for me from last year. And I just don't want to relive that again. And I feel like with the Suns, with this new direction, with this new kind of way they're kind of heading into things, we're kind of away from that. And I feel like Giannis would kind of bring us back into those kind of.
Yeah. Like, let's never get excited about a guy who's like in 3 months out of the NBA, like we did that first KD year. Who was the guy that was supposed to be a great shooter that we got with him? That God, he was, I think, Chinese or no? He's like the Chinese dude.
Utah Watanabe.
Yeah, Watanabe. That's right. I kept in my head. I'm like, I thought the name was Utah, but I kept thinking Utah Tabusi, and I'm like, nope, that's one of those, like, it's blending together, because that was like in the mid 90s. I remembered it. I was so stoked for that guy. I'm like, he shoots like 87% from corner threes. There's something ridiculous. And then he got to Phoenix and basically like forgot how to play basketball, and then was back in China or Japan, I guess it is, right? He was back overseas before the season was over. And it's like, cool. Let's never get super excited about another one of those dudes again. I would be so happy. I'm not like, not a knock on him. Like, I was genuinely excited. I just would like to not experience that again.
Yeah, it's like when Jared Butler got signed. We're like, oh, Jared Butler, yay! We're gonna those signings are cool. It's the end of the offseason. It's fun, but I don't want to have to like make that person believe in that person's gonna change my team's season.
Right? Exactly.
They're not changing the team's season.
And that's like the Elia Kobo game back in the day. Like, when he like scored 30 in the last game of the season, whatever it was. I feel like we always have one of those dudes that like scores like 30 something in the last game. You're like, oh, next year is the year. Next year is never the year for those guys. Never.
Next year they're on another team before the end of the season.
next year is a year, but it's not the year.
But yes, exactly. But thank you, Sosa J, Justin, for hopping on the Suns Planet Pod today. Like I said, we had no Jake here today, but we were able
to. Which is good, because I don't get bullied then. I try to avoid that, Jake. In case anybody out there doesn't know, Jake is very mean to me and picks on me all the time. It's hurtful, but it's okay. Everyone's there to support me, and we're all still friends. It's fine.
But yes.
I love Jake. I love you, Jake, wherever you are. I love you, buddy.
Yeah, Jake, we certainly miss you. We hope you're having a good time on your nice little trip. And once again, I would like to say thank you to all the Suns fans that came here in the chat today. We had King Nacho. We had Michael P., who's the future becomes the present. We also had Classy Nasty, who I don't believe I've ever seen in here before as well.
That is a name. I love it. Mm-hmm.
And we had
sounds Michael like one of Boyd's Evans. Burners.
And Michael Evans earlier as well. So thank you guys so much for tuning in here for the Suns Planet Pod. We would like to say from me and Jake that we obviously, now that the season is over with the Suns, right? We are in the off season. The pods will be slowing down a little bit. We will be doing, you know, a draft pod. We will be doing free agency pods. We have discussed doing some mega pods as well, getting the Bright Side group all together. But we won't be doing it every single week talking about the Suns, because as we all know, there's nothing to really talk about the Suns right now. You know what I mean? They're kind of done. So we will be taking, you know, a little bit of a couple week hiatus, but definitely stay tuned to the Suns Planet Pod Twitter, or either to my Twitter, which is posted here, to see the updates of when the Suns Planet will be brought back. But Justin, before we do leave, I'd like to give you the chance to plug where the Planeteers can find you so they could listen to you either on Flanning the Flames or hear your discussions on Twitter about the referees.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at SosaJ. It's right there. Where did my hand go? I want to do this. I can't see my hand. There it is. Okay. Our pod is at Fan the Flames NBA, and we, I think, put out 3 episodes this season, which was an all-time low, were awesome. Next year, maybe we'll do it more, but probably not. I'll just keep jumping on other people's pods and taking up their time and dominating their conversations. But dude, I appreciate you having me on. It's always fun. You guys, look, man, it's great that you guys do this on Saturday mornings, because that's like the old solar panel slot. So, you know, when we were kids, we'd do Saturday morning cartoons. Now we got like Saturday morning Sun's Planet. So it's nice. Kudos to you guys and you Jake and Kevin, even though he's now retired, you guys do a fantastic job. And like I said, appreciate you guys having me on always.
Yeah, it's always a blast. I mean, like I said, I was happy you were able to hop on. I love having discussions like in the group chat when we're all just like talking about the Suns here and there, but like in person or just face to face, it just makes it a lot easier, makes it a lot more personable, more fun to go and like engaging in conversations. I don't want to be blowing up the group chat for 2 hours talking about the Suns. So
you're like, why do I have 700 alerts from fucking Twitter? God damn it, guys, shut up for a little bit.
I look over my messages, it's like 70 plus. I'm like, whoa,
like oh no. But, someone's upset.
But I appreciate you hopping on once again. Like I said, Planet Tears, we will be back here in a couple weeks, like as we gear closer to the draft, gear closer to free agency, we'll have some more pods for you guys. But like we said, the Suns season is up and over. They did lose to the Thunder in 4 games in the first round, but have a lot of fun to be looking forward to in the offseason and a lot of promising storylines as well heading into next year. So once again, thank you so much, Justin, for hopping on the podcast. Thank you for everybody tuning in. And Al McCoy, take us away one last time for the season.
Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, stay with us as the Suns get set to shine here on their home court.
Here's Perry, the guard Hurd. Here's the jump shot. Good! It's good!
Al McCoy with you courtside.
Pumped up a 3.
Tuesday! He ties it!
Here's Cameron Payne out on top. Durant, 3-pointer straight away.
I just want to take this opportunity to thank everyone in this arena this afternoon, to all of those that are watching and listening on radio and TV. A thank you for allowing me to tell the story of the Suns for 51 great years.
That pretty much wraps things up here. And for one last time, this is Al McCoy saying thanks for being there. Thanks for being with us tonight. And from the Footprint Center here in downtown Phoenix, we'll just say so long for now.